Small problems are easy to solve. Big problems, much harder to solve. And so at some point, what you have to realize is that if you have a bunch of big, hairy problems you're trying to solve, you need help. If you are the only person with a hammer able to whack these moles, that's going to be really freaking hard.
How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a $1 billion portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build.
Today, what I want to talk about and I want to share with you guys is how to build a business that grows itself. So a lot of people who get into business because they want freedom. And then when they get into business, they start to feel like they have a job. And so today, what I want to show you guys, and I want to share with you an example of a portfolio company that I have, where we implemented these exact four things that went from them feeling like they had jobs to feeling like they had a business that could grow itself. So let me tell you about this business. So we started looking at this business, it was over 2 years ago now. And at the time, our target was brick and mortar chains. Specifically, it could be a franchise, it could be owner operated. The difference is this: when you have a franchise, you essentially have like a model that works for one location. And then you can franchise out essentially locations for other people, which means they get to use your name of your company, they get to use your operating systems, and they have to pay you a fee in order to use those things. On the other side, you have owner-operated, which is, for example, Panda Express. You see locations all over the place. Most of them, they were owner-operated, meaning that one person, Andrew Chern, owned all of those locations himself, and the people running them were employees. Versus a franchisee. A franchisee, they're operating it as if it's their own business. An employee, it's like you have employed somebody to operate your location for you. So we sought out to look for another one that we could bring into our portfolio. And we found a chain that we really liked. And it was actually in the dental industry, cosmetic dentistry specifically. And they had over 20 locations and they were growing quickly. And specifically, I really liked the founders because they were young, they were hungry, it was a married couple, and I just liked them. And I thought that they had something really cool at hand, given they had a really good product that worked. And so they had a fantastic product and really clear path to growth, because when we started talking to them, we explained, you know, based on their product and their unit economics are just, what are the economics per location? What's the revenue? What's the profit? What's the ROI per location? And we explained to them essentially that because you have such good unit economics, it makes sense to own all these outright. In our opinion, if we were to buy the business today, we would just buy the business and take all the franchises and flip them into owner-operated model. We would buy them out and then put our own employees in. And so we ended up going down the diligence route and we actually ended up partnering with them. And so as we partner and as you go through the process of getting to understand the business better, you start to understand what you really need to scale the business. And what I always know is that it's so exciting, it's so shiny, and it's like, oh my gosh, we have so much potential, right? And that's very common in businesses that are smaller that you see a ton of growth potential with. However, then when the time comes where it's like, okay, now we have to grow the business and we have to understand every department so that we can do that, what we realized is that they were at this inflection point because the leader specifically, one of the founders, was a fantastic sales-oriented leader. She was an absolute savage, but she oversaw both sales and marketing. And so the issue that we saw was that it was like she was playing whack-a-mole. What was happening is that every time she focused on sales, sales would dial in and we would improve our metrics. And then that same month, marketing would go down. And then we'd say, hey, wait, marketing. And then the next month, she'd focus on marketing. And then we'd be like, wait, what happened to sales? And sales would go down. And so the reason for that was she was actually the sole manager of both of those departments. And so she's trying to juggle almost like between 40 to 50 people on her own without any help. So what happened is that we came in and we were really excited because we were like, oh, we're going to put this back-end offer in place. We're going to dial in the sales process. We're going to add in some Ascension and backend offers to increase LTV. And then once we hit these metrics in the next 6 months, we're going to blow this business out of the water. And what happened instead is that we essentially rolled out a new sales process where we were like, we're going to be able to maximize LTV. We're going to be able to probably triple what each customer is worth to us. And what happened is that the first month, we saw all the metrics going in that direction. And then what happened that month? Marketing dropped. And so then the next month, we're like, hey, what's going on with marketing? You know, in order to sell, we gotta get leads. And so next month, she focused on marketing. And then what happens is all the new processes that she had just put in place and she was training the reps on, they stopped doing. And so what we found out by my team would actually, we all went to locations to see what was going on, is that there was a lot of inconsistency. There was inconsistency in the sales process on a month-to-month basis because her attention was going back and forth between these two things. So I'm talking to my team and I'm like, listen, we have to get some help in here because we have no leaders. We just have a ton of doers and there's not enough thinking power. And I see this in a lot of businesses that are small, which is there. It works when you're very small. But then small businesses that grow become medium-sized businesses. And in order to grow past being a small business, you need more than one brain to make it into a big business, and even more than two, depending on the number of people you have to employ. And for this business specifically, when it's brick and mortar chains that have multiple locations with multiple people in there and decentralized teams, it's a lot of management oversight. We realized that there's a lot more of the founders being spread thin than we understood. They're playing whack-a-mole this entire time. And so what we saw happen that really indicated to me that something fundamentally, strategically needed to change is that we saw about 60% drop in appointments. And so when we tried to implement this new sales process and we're trying to retrain all the reps, and we're trying to get this through to all locations, during that period of time, because she was over sales and marketing, we saw a 60% drop in appointments. And so the team's thinking, what's going on? It's got to be this, it's got to be that. It's simply split attention. It is the fact that her eye was not on the ball because we had directed her to pay attention to putting this new sales process in place. And so what happened was revenue stayed flat. And we said, you know what? We have to revisit what we're going to do to successfully roll these things out. Because in a business that has multiple leaders that are able to follow through with new systems and new processes, it makes sense to roll those things out. But if it's one leader that has to roll things out on every single department, that is just too much for one person to do. And so what I want to share with you guys is what we did to fix this, how we turned it around, and why that business is now going from stagnant, if not going down, to growing and thriving. So let me actually just draw out for you what this was feeling like for the business owners. So what happens, and a lot of people feel this way, is when you have a small business and it starts growing and you don't get leadership team in place, you feel like you're playing whack-a-mole. It's like you've got problem one over here. All of a sudden you have problem two, you have problem three, and then you go over here and you're like, I'm going to work on problem one. And then as you're working on problem one, you're like, all right, I've got this. All of a sudden problem two has gotten even bigger. And then you're like, I got to go work on problem two. And then you start to, but it's taking longer. And while you're doing that, problem three popping up even bigger. And so what happens is that the more time you wait to solve a problem in your business, the bigger it gets. And what we want to do in business is we want to solve problems while they're small. Small problems are easy to solve. Big problems, much harder to solve. And so at some point, what you have to realize is that if you have a bunch of big, hairy problems you're trying to solve, you need help. If you are the only person with a hammer able to whack these moles, that's going to be really freaking hard. It's like marketing department's on fire, product's on fire, CS is on fire. There's no way that you're going to be able to solve those problems. And even so, okay, this leads me to my next point. Even if you think that you can try and solve all these problems, do you really think you're going to do that at your best when you have what I call the attention jar? If you're a business owner, imagine that your attention is like a jar of marbles. And so you've got a problem over here with marketing. You've got a problem over here with sales. You've got a problem over here with CS. You've got a problem over here with ops. You've got a problem over here with I'm burning money. But you only have so many marbles in your jar. And so even if you can solve all of these problems, what happens? You go and you say, I'm going to try and solve marketing. And you recruit two attention points to solve marketing. What goes with these other three? You're thinking about the other things that are on fire. And so do you think that you alone are the best person to solve these problems? You're not. And the reason is not because you're not capable. It's because you have more in your head than anybody else. If you were to hire a sales manager when you have a sales problem, that person has five marbles and they will all go towards sales. So even if you're better at it, they have more attention because your attention is split through the entire business and every single freaking problem that arises. So this brings me to the solution. So one of the main things when I looked at how am I going to fix this business? How am I going to make sure that we're not going to continue to have such spread thin attention and play whack-a-mole? Because businesses that are playing whack-a-mole don't grow. If anything, they die. So I have a theory about businesses, which is you essentially need three heads to run a business. It means three really strong people. You need one person who's completely focused on product, very product-driven. You need one person who completely understands marketing. And then you need one person who can make it all happen. Does this mean that they all need to be founders? No. But it means that you need to understand who owns each of these in the business. And so what I realized when I was looking at everything is that we had one founder that had taken care of the product. And we had another founder who was a savage at marketing and sales. What was missing? We had nobody to be the lead executor, which is why we said, you know what? Let's go hunt a COO. And that's exactly what we did. And so that's the first thing we did. We said, we are hiring a COO. Listen, I'm going to get more tactical about the things we did to fix these problems, but we need the person who's going to oversee the problem and the fixes.
Guys, I just want to take a quick break to thank all of you for listening to the show so far. If you enjoy what you're listening to, I would be so grateful if you would just consider leaving me a review or even sharing it with somebody who you think would love to hear the kind of content. As you can see, I don't run ads on here, so the only way that this show grows is if we can continue to make awesome content, and the only way I can do that is through you liking, subscribing, and rating. All right, let's get back to it.
Once we get in a new COO, what do we do next? Next, why is it that people are not following the processes? Because the processes were told verbally, not documented. And what we want is we want processes that are documented and said verbally. Because what happens after you tell someone what to do verbally? Do you think they're going to remember after one time of you telling them? They'll probably do it for a day and then go back to whatever they were doing before. This is why we document things in businesses, because people forget. And so instead, what we decided to do is we said, great, we have to get processes built out so that people know what their jobs are. The next thing we did is because they have the advantage of having a physical location, is I said, we want signs. There's a lot of things that signs can cue for people. And so from a customer's perspective, what are the top questions that a customer has when they come in and they're about to have something done to their mouth? And so why isn't it that we have all the chairs lined out? Now we put signs in front of all the chairs that clearly explain the expectations that they should have walking into their appointment. And on the other side, we add hidden signs for the employees. So for example, behind the front desk, when a customer walks in, list it out with everything that they're supposed to say to the customer when they walk in. Because yes, we could just train them like any other company, but we have the advantage of being in person where we can just have visual cues that remind people to say certain words. When you're playing whack-a-mole, a huge reason that the sales team wasn't able to continue to do the processes is we didn't have enough cues, reminders, or documentation in place. We can't expect that we tell someone something once, they're going to keep doing it forever. People forget things and they get distracted. And then you know what they do? They go back to the norm. If you don't want people to go back to what they've always done, you need to make it easier to do the new thing and harder to do the old thing. And the best way to do that is by doing these three things. Here's the thing. Processes are great, but processes won't work, right? Unless you have people who are incentivized to follow them. So what's the third thing we did? I looked at the model that we had. And essentially, when we first came in, the model that they had for their corporate-owned locations was to have W-2, like, I'm going to go ahead and say this, guys. I'm going to say low-skilled employees. And those are the people operating the locations. They're not paid a ton. They have no incentive on the location. And they have a low incentive on volume of sales. And most of these people don't come from a sales background. And so we said, you know what? Strategically, one of the issues we have with these locations is that, you know what would be great? Is if we didn't just have the founder or the COO reinforcing the training and reinforcing the processes, but what if we had the person, an owner operator in each location? So what if we swapped this W-2 for the owner operator? What's an owner operator? For example, this is how you attract a higher caliber of person. is we say, what we're going to do is we're going to give you a base salary, and then you're going to get either a rev share or a profit share on the performance of the location. So base plus profit share or rev share. Why? Because that attracts a higher caliber of person, somebody who wants to be autonomous, somebody who wants more responsibility, and somebody who wants to make more money. And if we want somebody to reinforce the things that we need to grow the business, then we want somebody that's focused on this, not somebody who's just clocking in and clocking out, which is what we had. And so what we did is we said, you know what? Let's start one location. Let's just do it now. So we brought in one person, just like literally the next day. We were like, let's go out and find this person, hire them, put them in, completely blew the location out of the water. If you're trying to completely change your internal talent strategy, just start with one person and see how well it works. And now the fourth thing that we did to turn around the business is we put in place a formal training program. So now that we have this fancy schmancy COO, we said, great, what we need to do is train up everybody else. So yes, we switched to the owner-operator model, but they're still going to have people that work for them. And so how do we make sure that we have quality assurance throughout our business? What is quality assurance? It's maintaining the quality standards that you set out with from the get-go. And that is the point of training, is to ensure that. It's so that we can uphold our KPIs and we can maintain quality of service. And so what we did is we essentially rolled out a training program. And here's the two things I want you to understand about training program. A lot of people think, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to spend days training people with this lengthy, crazy... No. The best training happens very frequently in small doses. And so what this looks like is very simple. 15 minutes a day. That's it. The best training happens more frequently with less intensity. So the difference between a process and something you train someone on is a process is often just a documented instructions of how to do something. Here's the steps you follow. Here's the words you say. Training often involves teaching how to think through something, reinforcing a process, reinforcing a script, or teaching how to think on the fly in the situations that you do not have documented. I would say like in the gray areas, right? When this thing happens that we couldn't have foreseen, what do we do in that case? And a lot of the times what we're doing in training is we're positively reinforcing anything that we want to see from somebody. It could be following a process. It could be following a script. It could be handling an objection well. It could be even just being willing to fail when you're trying to make a sale. Being willing to fail when you're trying to help a customer that's upset. And so really what you want to do in those training sessions is you want to positively reinforce everybody that is there. You do not want to use those sessions to come down on people and to be mean to people, because then guess what? They negatively associate training with getting punished. So what do they not want to do? They don't want to train. Why do a lot of people not want to learn? Because they hated school, because they got punished in school. So the reason why we wanted to get the COO in place first is that at acquisition.com, we always talk about these three things. We've got the what, the how, and the who. We want to figure out what is the problem, how do we solve it, and who does it. Now, you could say the equal opposite order goes for when you execute. So we, as the founding team, identified the what, we identified the how, and then we said, now we need the who to go carry out these two. And so that's why we start with the COO, because if we don't start with the who, then we end up having the founder doing the how and doing the what. And we don't want to do that because that just keeps us stuck where we are, which is playing whack-a-mole. So what's happened about, I want to say it's been 5 months since we put in place the COO. And so what we saw is that things are starting to stabilize, because what we want is everybody wants a linear line that their business grows upon. We do not want this up and down jagged line. And so what's happened is that we've seen that marketing and sales have started to stabilize, and they're both going in the right direction, and our revenue is up.